Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, Editor-in-Chief of Boat International, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of super yachting is Sophia Wilson, our Acting Deputy Editor. Sophia, hello.
Good morning, how are you?
Very good, thank you. Why don't we kick off with you telling us a bit more about this week's interview?
Yeah, so I'm afraid I'm also in charge of the interview this week, so it's a bit of a Sophia show. But I caught up with Captain Stephen Edwards, who is on 60-metre Perini Navi Seahawk. And we caught up a couple of weeks ago while he was in Panama, just having some downtime in between a nearly 2 month stint in the Galapagos Islands. Steve joined the yacht last October, and he's loving working for its new owner, who's determined to use the yacht for charitable and scientific causes, as well as obviously having some fabulous time on board himself. This kind of endeavour started in the Galapagos, where the yacht teamed up with Yacht Aid Global to launch a programme helping to teach local children how to swim and sail. And it's clearly a programme that really motivates the crew. So we also discussed a bit about the difference between sailing yacht and motor yacht crew and whether below deck is impacting recruitment in the industry. Captain Steve also has worked on multiple Perini Navi yachts during his career. So we also chatted a bit about what that brand means to the industry and why it's so important that it finds a buyer. He's a super experienced captain and he's running a great program, so do stay tuned for that at the end of news.
What kind of stuff did he do with Yacht Aid Global?
So they took out a number of oppies on board and donated them kind of to the community to help teach the children to sail, and the crew were also involved in teaching some of them how to swim as well, because a lot of the children there can't actually swim, which seems crazy when they're living in a kind of island area, but it's obviously vitally important for safety reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that sounds great. I mean, Yacht Aid Global, a number of super yachts get involved in that. And they're very good at the kind of the first responder aspect, aren't they? After hurricanes, for instance, in the Caribbean and elsewhere, they make sure and help coordinate super yachts getting to these areas and getting water makers working and things like that, shipping supplies, all sorts of things. So, yeah, lots of great work being done by Yacht Aid Global.
Yeah, and I think what was nice is that obviously they're brilliant at the immediate reaction stuff, but this was something a bit more planned and something that will hopefully be put in place and therefore can be built on, developed on, and maybe other owners or yachts that visit can also then take part in it while they're in the area.
Yeah, so there you go. So if you're an owner or a skipper who is cruising somewhere that doesn't benefit from all the things we're used to in the Europe or America, then get in touch with Yacht Aid Global because they're a good organization. They can give you some great advice about what to take with you and help out those communities you meet along the way. Alrighty, in a bit of housekeeping news, the October issue of Boat International is now on sale. So obviously go and buy it immediately if you're not a subscriber. It's a brilliant issue. It's our biggest one for a long time, actually, because it's all centered around the Monaco Yacht Show, which is next week, which we're very excited about. So Polaris, the big 70-meter Rossi Navi, is on the cover, but there's loads more packed into the issue. There's a brilliant design report put together by our luxury editor. So that's lots of inspiration for your next yacht project or refit project or even house project. Sophia, you did some research around the Azores.
Yeah, I did. It was a great piece to write. I didn't actually get to visit, which normally I manage for these voyage features, but COVID is still making things slightly tricky on that front. But it was great. It's a place I've heard lots about kind of over the years, sort of little bits from captains that have gone and said it was fabulous, but no one seems to spend that much time there. So kind of did some digging around what some of the things are that you can do there. Particularly spoke to Captain John Creepy, who's on Dorothea the Third, who we obviously have spoken about before on the podcast, and he was an interviewee. But they actually spent 8 weeks there with the owner on board and absolutely rave about it. So it is definitely a place that should be on your radar. It's not easy, and it definitely still should be seen as kind of an adventure destination rather than an extension of the Med. But it's got some huge benefits for yachts that do visit.
Yeah, there's more to the Azores. And we were trying to think of the cover line. We're trying to rhyme the Azores with something. I think we settled on why it's time to explore the Azores. But it really is. I mean, from reading the feature and seeing the photos, my knowledge of the Azores was very, very poor. But it's better now, thankfully. But it does look like a great place to spend a bit of time. And what a wild middle of nowhere kind of place to go.
Yeah, I mean, John at one point said there were times when the scenery rivaled French Polynesia. And from some of the photos that he sent, it really did. I mean, it's because it's kind of similar in that it's a it's volcanic, and yeah, some of the landscapes are pretty dramatic there. Not quite as warm, I don't think, but still pretty fabulous.
There you go. Get that on your bucket list today. It's definitely time to explore the Azores. Elsewhere in the issue, we have a massive cruise special. So that was all put together by Charlotte, our features director. So it's all about advice on finding, keeping the right kind of crew for your boat, how to keep them motivated. There's a great piece about whether crew work too hard. That was really interesting, I thought. There's obviously a naturally below deck comment or two in various parts of that feature, because it's the ongoing debate about whether it's been good or bad for the superyacht industry is interesting. I think people are much more accepting now about below deck. Anyway, the feature's not about below deck. It's more broadly about crew and lots of really great advice if you're an owner or captain or even a crew member yourself, about how to get in the industry, stay in the industry, find the right job, stay motivated, stay healthy, all that kind of good stuff.
I was going to say, how often do you find that you're asked about below deck when you're out and about or socializing with people, particularly outside the yachting industry? I do find that people are suddenly way more interested and understand a lot more about super yachts, or that the industry exists, more than they used to.
Well, that's it. I mean, so I get that for many people, the show was an affront in the beginning. Like, the kind of slightly more austere, slightly more traditional world of super yachting, and people thought this show was just the wrong kind of impression. But the flip side of that is it's opened a massive audience to super yachting that would never have known this world existed before. So, you know, cost benefit, it probably works out in the end, doesn't it? I might get an angry letter or two after saying that, but I have a conversation with a couple of people at the Cannes show about this, and, you know, they said, you know, they made exactly that point. They said, I get that it winds people up and it sometimes isn't shining the best light on the superyacht industry, but, you know, many, many more millions of people now know superyachting exists. And it's definitely broadened the market for our industry. So how can that be a bad thing in the final analysis? I guess we'll find out. Send me an angry letter. I'll be delighted to have that conversation with you.
It's meant people are much more interested in my job at weddings. That's all I can say. As a wedding guest, I'm getting a lot more interest than I used to.
There you go. Now the most popular person at the wedding.
Yeah.
Elsewhere, so what else we got in the issue? There's a brilliant story about Firebird, the oyster, which was due to go to Antarctica and the Arctic, but then obviously COVID hits. They spent the grand detour, spent a lot of time in the Pacific instead. That's a really good interview. Sfai, you did that one again.
I did, yeah. It was great to catch up with Firebird's owner. He's just really pushing the boundaries of what you think you could do with an oyster sailing yacht. He's obviously a passionate skier as well, so the yacht actually started off in... went up to Svalbard, started off there, did skiing in Norway, then came across to Antigua. And then, yeah, when it became clear that Antarctica wasn't going to be possible, went down and spent some time in the South Pacific instead. But it's a really great piece. He's so passionate, and great to see people having those kind of adventures on sailing yachts. I think we so often think about, you've got to have an explorer yacht and it's got to have all of this. And actually, he's kind of proving that, you know, if you are careful and you plan well and you do good preparations to your boat, there's no limit to what you can do.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Really inspirational guy, Andre. He spoke at the Life Under Sail conference a few years ago about some of the adventures he's had in that boat. David and Anne Sutherland, who were in last week's interviewees on the podcast, are the feature of the owner's profile in the issue. We've also got all the winners of the World Superyacht Awards are in there, which is great, and little explanations about why the judges favoured those particular boats. We got the Azimut, 38-metre Azimut Grande Trideck, which is a fascinating boat, actually. I can't wait to see this in Monaco. I haven't been on board yet, but it's one of the boats I'm very keen to have a look at, because it's got a really novel aft-deck arrangement. But yeah, loads in the issue.
So what else is on your hit list for Monaco this week? What yachts haven't you been on yet that you're really excited to get on board?
Well, the problem is, the problem is at boat shows. Like, ironically, I actually don't see that many boats, because I'm usually running around between appointments. And if I go on a boat, that's kind of, especially one of the bigger ones, there's 2 or 3 hours out of the day. And I don't always have that time. But I will make the time for some really special boats because there are some. I mean, that Grande Tridec, like I said, I think people need to see that because that's a really neat solution to a classic half-deck arrangement. Because in a 38-meter boat, they've kind of got quite a comprehensive beach club, but they've also elevated part of the aft deck to create a kind of a sun terrace. But there's also a lower part of the aft deck, kind of the more traditional cockpit area, which is a seating area. And I just want to see spatially how that all kind of fits together. So there's that. There's Great White. I want to have a look at their sunreef that Rafael Nadal bought.
And it's catamaran.
And it's a catamaran. Can't get away from that. Club M, the Baglietto, which obviously picked up a World Superyacht Award just the other week. I think for Baglietto, that's a really important boat because it really shows what they can do on a custom platform. Tatiana, the big Bilgin, haven't seen that. IJE, which great news. The big 108-meter Bonetti is going to be there, which is now for sale. We'll chat about that in a second. Polaris, obviously the cover boat this issue. Because, I mean, so many boats I haven't had a chance to get on just because of COVID that usually you'd see during the course of the year. So now there's this backlog of boats, the new Swan 120, Viva the Fed ship. I mean, million. It's 1,000 of them. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm personally really excited about Victorious that I'm going to be there covering for a feature in one of the future magazines because she's just had such a kind of interesting backstory to her. She's been in build for 14 years. She was initially started in Chile and then the shipyard ran into difficulty. So Graham Hart purchased her. She was transported back to New Zealand in 100 containers. And then Graham Hart obviously moved on to what is now 170-meter Ulysses, and she was picked up by her current owner and then finished in Turkey. So I think she did 37,000 miles without any engine miles. So she is going to be at the show, and I'm really excited about getting on board and seeing her finally completed.
Yeah, me too. She's one of the bigger boats too, isn't she, at the show? I think she's kind of in that top kind of three or four. Yeah, fascinating project. It's great because sometimes there's a few boats like this. In fact, we'll talk about another one in a minute that has now some potential to be completed, which is really interesting, which is Project K, or formerly known as Project K. But great to see Victorious finally on the water and finished. It'd be interesting to have a look around her.
Were you aware of her when Graham Hart did that and brought her back to Auckland?
I didn't know he had bought her, actually. That was news to me when I found that out. But the whole story about getting her there in shipping containers, that's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing more. And also, seeing the final product.
Yeah. Talk about other super yachts in the news. You've probably seen... So it's funny because... occasionally we'll get kind of crazy spikes in traffic to our website and we think, oh, well, that's interesting. Why is that? Because a lot of people were reading about Flying Fox this week because Beyonce and Jay-Z were on the world's most expensive charter yacht posing for various photos. And I think she put that on her Instagram with her many, many hundreds of millions of followers. I've got no idea how many followers she's got. But so then you think, because then you kind of reverse engineer it. So, okay, so that's why suddenly our Flying Fox report is one of the biggest things on the website currently.
Yeah, well, Beyonce does tend to like a charter holiday a summer. So she does tend to help us out with some traffic once a year when she goes on her trips. And she's always quite vocal about it on Instagram. She was wearing stilettos on board in some of the pics, which slightly made me wince. But if you're Queen Bee, I guess you can do that kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't care who you are. There still would have been a bunch of crew behind her going, what is she doing?
Yeah. But I mean, Flying Fox is an incredible yacht. So I'm sure she's having a pretty wonderful time.
Yeah. What a boat. That was at Monaco a few years ago. So if you want to have a look at what attracted Beyonce and Jay-Z to Flying Fox, head to the website now, the report's there for your perusal. Lots of great photos, a brilliant feature. Check it out now. So another big superyacht making news, not quite as big as Flying Fox, but certainly as beautiful, and actually one of the most, it's just a gorgeous, sleek explorer yacht, this from RWD, a studio that's actually absolutely on fire at the moment. It's 108-meter IJE from Bonetti, which delivered in 2019. So that's in the news because it's been listed for sale by her owner, asking 175 million euros.
Yeah, so we think that puts her fourth on the current most expensive list of yachts in the market. So she's just behind Mad Summer, Luminosity and Amadeus. But yeah, she's certainly up there at the top end of the brokerage market. And she's going to be at Monaco Yacht Show as well, which I think you already mentioned. So I'm sure she'll be garnering plenty of attention there.
Yeah, she's the biggest boat at the show, which is great. It'd be lovely to see her. I hope I get the opportunity to have to sneak on board and have a look around. So when Caroline records these podcasts with me, I torture her by quizzing her on what the most expensive yachts for sale are. But Sophia, you've done your homework, so I can't torture you.
Yeah.
But you're right. So Mad Summer tops the list. She's asking 229 million euros with Moran as Luminosity. It's listed with Burgess and Fraser, asking 225 million. Amadea, price on application, but I think she slips just under Luminosity. Kiswit, asking, then it's IG, isn't it?
Yeah, and Kismet sits just beneath her. I think asking 165 is Kismet, or 168, I can't remember off the top of my head.
Not bad.
I haven't done that much homework.
What, 169.
A few out. What's a few million between friends?
Exactly. Really interesting to see her listed. But she'll attract lots of attention, I'm sure, because she's a really special boat. She was on the cover, I think, of our October 2020 issue, exclusively with Boat International. The only place you'll find that story. I'm just negotiating with the owner's rep now. Fingers crossed we can get that story online for you, because it's a really, really good one again. So talking about the Monaco Yacht Show, we are going to attempt to record the podcast from Monaco. Exactly where, we don't know. How, we're not sure.
I don't think we even know when.
Or even when. We'll do our utmost to bring you a podcast from the show and some of the news and what's going on. Give you a bit of an impression of what it's like, the Monaco Yacht Show, after its hiatus last year. But anyway, back to this week's news. And Sophia, why don't you talk us through the headlines and I'll do some data, and then we'll move on to Seahawks captain.
So we've picked out a few different stories that have caught our eye this week, starting with that the interior design details have been released about two of the private residence yachts that are currently in build, 222-metre Somnio and 289-metre Njord. Is it Njord or Nord? I never know whether that's meant to be a silent J or whether you're meant to pronounce it. Any ideas, Stu?
My money's on Njord, we could ask next week because we'll be seeing them at the show.
Okay, well, you have to forgive me because I'll continue to butcher it for the next few minutes. But once we've caught up with them, I promise next time we're talking about it, I'll get it right. Anyway, so Njord has announced a selection of international designers that have been chosen to design their residential apartments on board. The list includes lots of names that are very familiar to the superyacht industry, including Sabrina Montecarlo, Jean-Michel Gaffi, and Francesca Muzio. She has penned interiors of yachts, including 55-metre Fedship Somnium and 61.17-metre Lursen yacht Polar Star. Other designers on the list include teams such as Kelly Hoppen Interiors, 1508 London, Lynn Lee, Studio Becker, and Join Interior Design, and Pinto. So it's quite a collection that they've got in there. The other private residence yacht currently in build, completely separate project, Somnio, has revealed exclusive details to Boat about their interior designs, which have been created by Winch Design and Tilburg Design of Sweden. For this project, owners who manage to snap up one of the 39 customizable apartments on board will have a chance to work with either Winch or Tilburg to kind of create their own design brief. But Jim Dixon's from Winch's initial design show a super relaxed, easy oceanside living with super yacht elegance is how he's described it.
There's a flurry of, they're definitely having a moment, aren't they, private residence yachts. And Somnio was, the thing about Somnio, they went Njord. Espen designed it, the exterior, and worked, I think, on the layout as well. But it's a bit more. It carries its volume in a slightly more traditional way. Somnio takes a slightly different approach. It's kind of a yacht style first. So it's slightly more sleek. So it feels like it's scalable down to what traditionally could just be a classic kind of super yacht look. So it's going to be interesting to see how that affects the apartment spaces on board and things like that. But either way, you know, two different approaches to do an interesting design challenge, and both will be, I'm sure, very spectacular. But it's interesting that these private residence yachts, there seems to be a little flurry of them at the moment.
Yeah, I actually wrote a piece for the magazine. It must have been just about when COVID was coming in, so kind of back in March 2020, and spoke to various different people involved with it. And yeah, they really do feel that there is an appetite of owners that want to be able to have this experience, want to be able to go all around the world, but aren't necessarily prepared to kind of have their own yacht. And I know certainly having, I've actually been on the world and spoken to various people on there, and some people on there are previous yacht owners who have just decided that the world, in a way, is an easier option because it sort of carries on without them, and it, you know, they don't have crew and they don't have everything else that they need to be dealing with on a sort of personal basis. So it'll be interesting to see whether that market is there. They clearly think it is.
Yeah, it's definitely a kind of a low hassle, kind of low maintenance way to experience that kind of extreme on water luxury that you'd expect with a super yacht. So I think, yeah, two really interesting projects there. It'd be good to talk to the Njord guys next week about how that's advancing.
Yeah, looking forward to it. The next story that caught our eye was it's another interiors focused story, is that H2 Design has revealed the interiors for the Expedition Ready Sea Explorer 60. It's already under construction and it's due for delivery in 2024. Azure Yacht Design penned the Explorer model's exterior, while H2 has taken charge of its simple and clean interior. The design has an emphasis on multifunctional spaces, and a couple of them sound pretty amazing. There's a helideck which can double up as a party space, and then its lounge can also be turned into a snug multimedia room or cinema at night. There's also a covered outdoor space, which I think is aft of the main deck, that can be used either as a luxury cabana lounge, bar, a dive deck, a fitness and a wellness zone, or even a ski lodge, depending on what the owner wants. So that's quite a bit of a variety of options of use there. There's also lots of other lovely kind of expedition focused touches. So one of the things that H2's put in is an abundance of shelving so that the owner can display various kind of tokens and trinkets from their travels. And it also features lots of neutral colours because the idea is that you want the eye to be able to focus on the amazing scenery that this yacht's going to be travelling to.
Great to see this from Darman and H2 Yacht Design. So Darman just keep hitting the right note with their lineups. I mean, you look back in the massive success they've had with the limited edition series, the new 60, the new work they're doing with Espen. They've got a 120 meter custom yacht in build. The new Sea Explorer series and their Yacht Support series. They seem to be a company that are very, very good at anticipating customer demand and building, and they're prepared to invest in the projects on spec and invest in the concepts and the models that really seem to tap into that slightly younger, more, you know, expedition minded customer clientele. So yeah, great work from them. It'll be another exciting boat from Darman, and can't wait to see it on the water.
Yeah, and the renderings of those interiors we've actually put on a web story online. So if you're interested and want to see them further, then definitely have a look out for those. They look stunning. So the last story that's caught our eye this week is that the 120 meter superyacht conversion project Y910 has been listed for sale. It's priced on application and it is available for delivery in the next 18 months. The eight-deck vessel started life as a passenger vessel called Vladimir Chivilikin. Again, apologies to any Russian listeners because I'm sure I butchered that pronunciation as well. And that was in 1990 when it was first built, and it was used by the Russian offshore industry until 1998. In 2006, Keppel Singmarine and Darman then began the conversion project, which is now looking for a new owner to bring it to completion. The hull, superstructure and crew areas are already close to being finished, and Fincantieri Shipyard will work on the rest of the conversion. The remaining interior spaces will be styled again by Winch Design, and can be completely customized to the owner's wishes. There is potential capacity for up to 36 guests in 18 cabin, as well as 50 crew. So there's definitely some space to play with there.
I had a long chat with the current owner of this project not too long ago, and it was fascinating hearing about the story of the boat, because it's one of those ones that kind of pops up on the radar every couple of years and then kind of slips beneath the news agenda. But it was I'd never spoken to him before, so it was great to get to spend so much time with him and hear his motivations for the project and why he's now selling it. And but you know, it's a vast boat, huge volumes, and I'm sure we'll make a really lovely kind of expedition yacht for somebody.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens.
Watch this space. Alrighty, last but not least, let's walk through today's data story, and that's brought to you as ever by Boat Pro, the superyacht industry's leading market intelligence platform. So during last week's boat briefing, we looked at French superyacht production, because obviously it was the Cannes show, and so this week the Genoa show is going on, so we're going to have a look at the Italian fleet. As you would expect, Italy is a much bigger player than France in the superyacht market, having delivered 4,126 yachts north of 24 meters, which makes up 35.4% of the entire fleet. So a third, basically, a little over the third of the entire superyacht fleet was built in Italy. In contrast to what we saw with France in last week's podcast, the Italian production is mostly composed of motor yachts, 3,943 against just 183. That's pretty stark, isn't it? So they built almost 4,000 motor yachts and only 183 sailing boats. Italy is also famous for its semi-custom series. 87% of all Italian yachts are from these semi-custom series. Obviously, those massive brands in the Ferretti Group stable and Azimut Benetti, etc., responsible for an awful lot of those. However, despite this, Italy is still responsible for a few giants: IJE, which we mentioned before, Luminosity. I mean, a number of them: Serene, Ocean Victory. They're the two biggest custom projects ever built in Italy by Fincantieri: 140-meter Ocean Victory and 133-meter Serene. Ocean Victory was actually anchored off Monaco the other day when we were there for the World Superyacht Awards. More recently, Benetti has delivered 300-meter-plus vessels: IJE, Luminosity, and Lana.
Yeah, so I think that means that looking at the current sales market, Italy also has two of the top four now most expensive yachts for sale, because it obviously has Luminosity as well. So they're slightly dominating that end of the sales market as well at the moment.
They are. So I'm hearing a few whispers about Luminosity and whether a buyer might be close to that. I hope so, because again, extraordinary project, some extraordinary gear on that boat, some great technology, and like a 27-meter high video wall or something like that. So that's, you know, quite something to behold.
Yeah, the video wall is particularly spectacular. It has sort of butterflies that react as you walk past it, and yeah, it has got some groundbreaking ideas on that yacht, so it would be good to see her sold.
Yeah, I completely agree. So when we're looking at the global order book, which obviously tracks all boats in build or ordered with a deposit taken every year, and that's published in our January issue, and work is furiously underway now by our man in the south of France, Raphael, to gather all this year's data. And when you look at LAT, so Italy comes out as number one by some margin. They represented 49.5% of all global production in the last global order book, with 407 projects with an average length of 36.8 meters. So Italy, by far and away, the biggest manufacturer historically of superyachts and currently of boats in build or ordered. So like I said, our next global order book report will be available a little later this year. So do check that out. And that brings us to the end of this week's news and data.
Yep, so we'll now move on to, sorry, me again, but chatting to the lovely Captain Stephen Edwards of 60-meter Seahawk. Captain Steve, thank you so much for sitting down with us for the podcast today. Where are you joining us from?
Currently sitting in Flamenco Marina in Panama. So having just come back from Galapagos Islands and getting ready for the next part of our trip.
And the Galapagos sounded like a pretty amazing adventure. How was your time there?
Yeah, it was great. I'm fortunate, actually. It's my second visit to Galapagos. I was there as a tourist 15 years ago, and so it was very interesting to go back again and see what's changed or what hasn't changed, and yeah, to experience the amazing wildlife and so on the area has to offer. It is still an extraordinary place, and yeah, very, very, very privileged to have been able to go there.
And did you notice many changes from when you were last there 15 years ago?
So actually I was surprised how little. The main town, like Puerto Ayora, has grown significantly since I was there last, but the smaller provincial towns are pretty much the same. The animals are still fearless. Birds will still land right next to you, and the iguanas will just lie in the way, and the sea lions don't get out of the way, and so on. But yeah, and in the marine areas, on the whole, there was still a huge amount of life there. Although I must admit, I do think we saw a reduction in the number of sharks, like the big hammerheads and so on, compared with what I saw some years ago. But that's entirely in keeping with the global numbers of these species now. So it wasn't a huge surprise.
And while you were there, you obviously were involved with the Yacht Aid Sail and Swim project. What did that involve?
Well, our owner has a mission, basically, in this tour that we're making, particularly Oceania, to move around and do some good on the way, in both scientific and community activities. And so he was looking for a scheme to support in Galapagos while we were there. And as a large sailing boat, this seemed like an extremely appropriate thing for us to be involved with. So we actually got involved in two different ways. Partly financially, in helping to fund and initiate the project financially through a donation towards buying some of the boats and getting an instructor trained, or providing the facility to train an instructor. But also taking the advantage of a large, high-profile sailing yacht in the area of the islands to be able to go around and promote. Well, you know, this is where one day working on learning to sail on a small sailing dinghy can lead one day to running a boat like this and being involved with a boat like this.
And did the program actually supply a number of boats for the local community to keep and use?
Yes, we bought an initial set of four Optimist sailing dinghies, which is to really start one of the three centres that Yacht Aid Global has foreseeing for this project. So we supplied four Optimists to San Cristobal Island, and which we brought with us also from Panama. The shipping items to the islands is very difficult. So we were actually able to get those boats, deliver them to the island and take them out sailing with the kids while we were there.
Amazing. And did the crew get involved with that as well?
Oh, yes. Yeah. This definitely involved everybody. We had the deck crew out there acting as sailing instructors with large numbers of kids. It was a huge turnout and huge interest. And also some of the crew were involved in presentations to the local population at events that were organised in each of the main towns, giving a little bit of a history of how they came to be into sailing and how it affected their lives and how it got them into doing what they're doing professionally to this day.
And was this the first time as a captain that you'd been involved in something like this as part of a kind of cruising itinerary?
Yeah, this is a new departure for me. Having the owners have a very altruistic view on what they want the boat to achieve and what they want the Seahawk as a brand to represent. And that's new and very refreshing. So organizing it was a lot of fun, actually. A lot very interesting putting this together, and an overall very positive experience.
And as well as the Yacht Aid Sail and Swim project, you also had scientists on board during your time there as well, is that right?
Yes, well, like I said, the mission statement, if you like, for Seahawk is to also try and contribute to scientific research, ecological support and so on. And the owners had come from a scientific background and as such are very interested in good science. So we also were able to team up with a group called Migramar, which is represented in this case particularly by Dr. Alex Hearn from the San Francisco Institute in Quito. And within Galapagos, in order to cruise Galapagos, it's required that you have a local dive operation boat accompany the vessel on its itinerary around the islands. And obviously in that case, that boat was going to be empty. So this was a very good platform that was going to be wasted unless we used those berths. So the way that it worked was, is that the liveaboard dive boat that was attached to us for our itinerary and gave us the ability to cruise the islands was then used as a base for the scientists to carry out their experiments and service their equipment in their longer ongoing projects to monitor the migratory species in this area.
And how was that experience? Did it enhance the experience, do you think, for the owner while he was there, sort of being involved in that research going on at the same time?
Yeah, I think it gives you a better understanding of really what's going on. You know, within the science program, they were also able to give presentations to us regarding the projects that they have with manta rays, with tuna, with hammerhead sharks, with whale sharks. And it helps to broaden, therefore, the experience. And, you know, we were able to get involved to a small degree in some of their actual activities, from trying to catch a hammerhead shark to tag it, or tagging a whale shark. And they have these kind of monitoring stations that they lay out in areas of interest, and going out and laying those in the sea, waiting while it's down there recording, and then recovering the equipment and bringing it back to the boat. They're still now, the data is as yet to be analysed, but they believe they've got some good results. So it was an interesting experience, and it certainly broadens the experience for everybody concerned, guests and crew.
And are you surprised that more yachts don't try and get involved in these sorts of initiatives?
It's a shame that they don't. I whether it's a surprise, I would say no, but it is a shame that they don't, because I think the overall experience that everybody gets, like I say, everybody from the owners through to the crew being involved, are getting a better and bigger experience from being in these places by being involved in a program which contributes to the area that we're visiting. So I'm not surprised, but it is a shame that they don't.
And clearly, you, moving on, you don't get to be captain of a 60-meter sailing yacht just overnight. So how's your career led you to this point?
I'm slightly unusual, I guess. My background actually is engineering. I studied electronic engineering for many years, and I worked as a design engineer for a large UK company in the defence business. Rising up through the ranks of that business, I became a project manager, which basically means I'm an accountant and a politician rather than an engineer anymore. And I got a bit fed up with that. So I turned my hobby, which I started from about the age of six, I think, as sailing, and had remained a hobby all my life. I turned that into my job about, 2003. So quit the office life and ran away to sea, and started out by running a liveaboard dive charter boat in the British Virgin Islands for 5 years. And my career has grown from that, really. Best decision I made was to change from the office life to the sea life.
And do you still find your engineering background useful? Do you still end up using it kind of while on board?
Yes, it's very useful to understand how the systems work on the boat, particularly from a maintenance and repair standpoint. I'm slightly unusual, perhaps, with captains in that I can read electronic drawings and this kind of stuff, which is quite useful. I can work with our engineers and with contractors and this kind of stuff with a decent knowledge base. So I do find it very useful to have that skill.
And how did that experience compare, you know, running a bare boat yacht in the BVI to where you are now? I mean, it's kind of two opposite ends of the sailing spectrum.
The boat I ran in the BVI was essentially a liveaboard charter boat. So it was doing charter work, but obviously not to the same level we're talking about in the yachting world. But it was super busy. It was multiple weeks back to back with 24-hour turnarounds. It was pretty intense and very hands-on. I must admit now, the charter world is not so much something that appeals to me. I prefer the private boats and knowing who you have coming and so on and having a kind of a more known program of what's going on and what's going to be going on in the future. The rules and regulations involved in running a large yacht like this now, as the regulation of the industry has increased over the years, is certainly gone a lot further than it was when I was running a boat in the BVI, 15 years ago.
And your CV is quite Perini Navi heavy. Is that been deliberate, or is that just the way that things have turned out?
Perini are the most prolific of builders for the large sailing yacht world. You know, when you get into the over 40 meter size of boat, there are more Perini Navis out there than any other. Fabio Perini essentially invented the concept of the joystick sailing boat back in the 1980s. So if you're into the sailing boats, then there's a fair chance, and you want to work on the big sailing boats, there's a fair chance that your paths and the path is going to cross with Perini Navi at some point in your career. And I've just come right now, I know the boats fairly well, you know, and it's a fairly natural progression to go from one to another. I like the people at Perini. I like the other people involved. There's a good community spirit amongst the fleet out there as well. So it tends to be that when you finally leave one boat, it's a natural progression to move to another one. And it's, I suppose you could say, it's out of convenience as well, because you can get off of one Perini and onto another one and recognise how things are done on the boat. And be able to recognise the strengths and weaknesses of the design, so you know how to work with it more efficiently.
And given what a kind of Perini fan you are, it must be quite distressing to see what's happening to the business. How much of a loss do you think it would be to the industry if they don't find a buyer?
Oh, it'll be a big hole if there's no buyer found. I'm sure there will be. I think the brand is too important in the industry to disappear completely. But obviously there's a lot of business politics and so on involved in this kind of thing, and a lot of money at the end of the day. So it will take some time to bottom out and for something to happen. But I'm confident that it will, because as I say, it's such a significant brand in the business that there is value in that before you consider the issues of being a boat builder in these slightly tricky financial times that we have at the moment. So. I'm confident that Perini will bounce back.
And your career's obviously always been on sailing yachts. What do you think are some of the challenges of running a sailing yacht, perhaps over a motor yacht?
Well, I often say, and I say it to owners sometimes as well, that we essentially deal with twice the complexity in half the space. Because by nature, sailboat hulls have a lower volume. And you know, and so on. And at the same time, there's an awful lot of equipment and complexity which is added by having the automated sailing systems included on board the boat. So there's a lot of extra systems to stuff into a smaller place, as well as all the standard hotel services and so on that you need that a motor yacht needs as well as a sailing boat. So I think that's probably the biggest thing is the extra complexity that's involved. But you know, when we get to go out sailing and we get the boat heeled over and going fast, you know, this boat Sea Hawk is good for 17 or so knots in a decent blow. That's a lot of fun, and it makes it all worthwhile.
And have you ever been tempted to switch to a motor yacht, or always sailing yachts for you?
Hey, you know, it's there's been the odd temptation, but it's always kind of got snuffed out fairly quickly, I'd say. And I've gone, no, you know what? I'm going to stick with the sailboats. I stick with what I know and what I know I like. So.
And do you find that with most of the crew that you're bringing on board, that they, you know, all come from kind of sailing yachts and stay in sailing yachts once they're in that side of the industry?
Well, again, there's definitely within the yachting community, which is obviously at the end of the day quite a small world. There is within that, there's another little world, which is a sailboat community. And you could even go another step further and say within that, there's the next little world, which is the Perini Navi family, as we call it. And, you know, when you get a crew member who comes on board and settles in and does well in the job within the sailboat world, then there's always a lot of opportunity for those keen that want to progress in the business within the sailboat community. Then there's always the opportunity to be passed around between the boats as and when it comes time for them to move on or move up the ladder. So you do see, and we do, you know, when I'm recruiting, you're looking around within the sailboat community quite a lot. So the right minds come in and the right attitude comes in from a crew member, then they can make a good career out of sailboats.
And do you think you're seeing enough good young crew coming into the sailing yacht industry?
Generally, at the moment, crewing market is quite difficult. You know, with any business, you've got different levels of people that come into it. You've got a lot that come in not really thinking of the industry as a career or whatever. They come in to make some money quickly and so on, and then they get out. I would say that there's probably 1 in 10 or something like this of people who come in who are going to perhaps make a long-term career out of the business and are going to therefore put the effort into growing their potential on board the boat. It's very satisfying to teach crew when you get somebody who wants to learn. But finding those is a challenge. It's not as easy as perhaps one might like.
And do you think that's changed over your kind of the last decade and a half that you've been in a captain?
I think the business has become more publicly known about. You know, you've got TV shows about yachting now and all the rest of it, and they present a picture of the industry which is perhaps not accurate in terms of the amount of actual hard work that is required to go on in the background. And so you do get quite a lot of people coming into the business with the wrong idea to start with. Because it does take a certain type of individual to succeed in this business. And I think that's become, therefore, there's a bigger percentage probably of those who don't really understand what they're getting into when they join than there perhaps was 10 or 15 years ago.
And presumably that's only likely to increase with Below Deck's ever-growing popularity.
Well, yeah, maybe. We'll see.
And obviously a programme like Seahawks, you'd imagine, would bring in some pretty good young crew. What's her plan for the next few months? Where do you go from Panama?
Well, we're heading to do a little bit of maintenance work now. We're going to, actually, it looks like Mexico. COVID does make life very difficult at the moment in being able to reduce one's choices of movements and availability of visas for crew and all this sort of stuff. So logistically, things become quite tricky. So we're heading north up towards Mexico in the next probably about 10 days' time. And then we'll be looking at some cruising probably up there. And eventually, though, the plan is to cross over towards French Polynesia and then start hitting the South Pacific for the next few years, really. So we've got a good program up ahead.
And have you spent time in the South Pacific before?
Not this side. I've been kind of from Singapore, Thailand, Maldives, Malaysia area. But I haven't done the French Polynesia, Tonga, Samoa, Micronesia, all these areas before, Indonesia and such like. So I'm looking forward to that. I like going to new places. You know, it's an opportunity that this boat is really giving us to go and cruise places that I've not been before. So that's great.
And is there one place in particular that you're looking forward to getting to that you've had your sights on for a while?
I guess because I am quite a keen diver, Micronesia, Trucum Palau and so on is very much on my must-do spots at some point. So I'm very much looking forward to going to those sorts of areas and diving on the Zero Fighter in Truck Lagoon and things like that. That's going to be a big highlight for me.
And are there any other charitable projects that you've got lined up so far, or is it a case of kind of getting to the destination and then seeing what might work?
As the schedule is at the moment a little bit up in the air, it's a little bit difficult. I mean, the partnership with Yacht Aid Global worked very well for us, and it may well be something that we can take further, as I know they have projects in these other areas as well, in Fiji and that kind of stuff. There are projects going on there that maybe we can assist with. Also, there's links as well with the science group that we've just been involved with here, because they're very much into the migratory species. Obviously, migration means they're in multiple different places. So they have linked projects in other parts and other areas of the Pacific that we would be hoping to visit. So we may well be able to join some dots up, as it were, with those projects as well, which would be exciting. But it's very much a maybe we're looking 6 months at a time for planning this kind of work as the itinerary unfolds.
And I know we're sort of all bored of talking about it, but how much is COVID still playing havoc with plans and trying to plan cruising?
It's possible to cruise without it having an enormous effect once you get to the area. The issue really is the logistics. And particularly crew and guests and so on, being able to actually get to and from the vessel. This is the biggest problem we have. With our crew now, we're all vaccinated and so on, which has opened up a number of doors to make things easier and avoided some quarantines and so on now for us, which is a big help. For example, not being able to transit the United States when anybody's been in the UK or Europe or whatever is hugely difficult, with then trying to arrange travel into the South Pacific, because almost every flight you can book travels through Los Angeles. Yeah. So and the usual visas that were required, even those are not accepted. So it's and at the same time, they're not being issued as well. So it makes it doubly difficult. So that's really the biggest headache, I think, that COVID is causing for us now, more than anything else. When we're actually in the destinations cruising, you almost wouldn't know it was there.
And do you think that's why yachting seems to be holding even more of an appeal now? If you look at brokerage sales, they seem to be going through the roof, because once you're there, you can still have that same experience.
Yeah, I can't really comment on the brokerage market that much. I mean, I do hear it is quite busy. It's funny how people, I think, seem to have developed the urge to go out and buy stuff after being locked up for a long time. That certainly seems to be the case as well in other areas, in property markets and this kind of stuff. So I guess yachts are an extension of that to some degree. So I think there's a pent up desire to get out and have new toys and to try and use them. So. Which I guess is a good thing for the business overall.
And will Seahawk be available for charter at all, or she's just going to stay for private use while she's on this world tour?
Seahawk is now a private vessel. We are 100% for the benefit of the owners and their family and friends. So yeah, we're not doing any charter in the foreseeable future.
Which probably makes your life slightly easier.
I prefer, I've made quite a conscious decision some time back, but I prefer the private boats to the charter boat environment.
Well, best of luck with the world tour. We look forward to hearing what you get up to. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it, especially when I know how busy you are.
My pleasure. It's been fun. It's nice to promote the project. And hopefully people will be hearing what Seahawk's been up to as we move around the globe. So it should be fun.
Yeah, you have to keep us updated.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week when we're live-ish from the Monaco Yacht Show.